Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with My Opel, rewarding loyalty and taking care of members.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
112 will always work worldwide for emergency services where there is no signal because it works off the GPS. Also, it's a tip that is worth remembering. And Pete in Cork says, you can get a good mobile signal on top of any Irish mountain. The clue is in the elevation. It's down at the bottom in the valleys where reception gets bad. Yes, you're right. It is down in the bottom when the reception gets bad in the valleys. But no, it's not the case that you could say that you could be guaranteed that you will get reception at the top of a mountain. No, this from personal experience as well. Basically, don't ever rely on your mobile phone. You should have a map as well if you possibly can. Cabinet is to meet later this week to finalise plans to remove remaining COVID-19 restrictions throughout the autumn and winter. However, speaking in Morning Ireland earlier on, the chair of NPHET's Epidemiological Modelling Advisory Group, Philip Nolan, said that while Ireland is well on target to have over 90% of the population vaccinated by the middle of September, we have not yet reached the level of vaccine protection that we would like to have, quote unquote. Joining me now, Professor Paddy Mallon, infectious disease consultant at St Vincent's Hospital. And I'm also joined by Dr. Peter Sloan, a GP in Connemara. Paddy, does it look like once again government plans and scientific advice might be the immovable object and unstoppable force heading towards each other?
Good morning. Nice to start with an easy question. I think that, you know, we're in a pretty tricky scenario at the moment because we still are seeing benefits from vaccination, and we're still seeing vaccine uptake rates that are high and that are continuing to be high. And while you're seeing the uptake rates not plateauing, so people are still seeking out vaccination, you really do have to protect those gains. And I can see from a public health perspective why, if there's still benefit to be had by more people getting vaccinated, that you would want to try and maximise that benefit before making any further decisions.
We're going to be talking to somebody from the equivalent of NPHET in Israel later on in the programme, where, as of course we all know, they were vaccinated ahead of everybody in the world. But back in June, they had 5 COVID-related deaths. So far this month, they've had just under 250 COVID-related deaths, and it is Delta that seems to be penetrating. That's a country of, I think, almost 9 million people, so not entirely dissimilar to us. Is that something that we should be looking at as a salutary tale?
So I think the basic reality as we're moving forward with high rates of COVID transmission within the country is that people will continue to catch COVID, people will continue to get sick from COVID, and unfortunately some people will continue to die from COVID. The overall numbers will be much lower than they were before, mainly because of the benefits of vaccination. But the types of people that we're seeing at the moment coming into hospital that are sick with COVID are those that have chosen not to get vaccinated, and also those that have underlying health conditions. So there are still people out there that, even though they've been vaccinated, they may have poor immune responses, they may have poor immune systems, and these people are still vulnerable if they catch COVID to getting very sick, and unfortunately even succumbing to the infection. And that is going to be the reality of what we're going to be living with in the months ahead.
The vaccinations are only one tool. Of course, ongoing restrictions is the other. Is this the wrong time, then, do you think, to loosen those restrictions?
I think that there are difficult decisions ahead, but the essence is that if we are in this process of, as we say, maximising our vaccine protection, as well as trying to open up society again, then at some stage you're going to need to move on to the next step. But it's very difficult to make blanket decisions because not every activity carries with it the same risk. So, for example, if you look at, an outdoor entertainment where you have a lot of young people dancing together in a sort of marsh pit, that's going to be a very different type of risk from, for example, a classical music concert where everyone's going to be seated. And it's those sorts of factors that need to be taken into account whenever decisions are made as to the next steps. And there's probably 5 main factors that will contribute to risk. The first is the background transmission rates within the community. And we know at the moment that they're high. They're particularly high amongst young people. The second is the type of contacts that are going to be happening within activity. So is it going to be frequent contacts? Are there going to be multiple contacts with that activity? The third one is the level of vaccination within a group. And if you look at younger people, although the vaccination uptake has been phenomenal, it's still slightly lower, for example, than what you'll see within the older population. So the risk of transmission within those two groups may be different. And then the fourth thing is the consequences of transmission. You could argue that the consequences of transmission amongst young people would be less than the consequences of transmission amongst a group of older people, where there may be more vulnerable and more sick people. And then the final thing is whether or not you can mitigate that risk more by additional public health measures, such as pre-event testing. And all of these things are currently being considered. And I don't know that there will be a one-size-fits-all approach, but I think it's really up to government and the industry to discuss in the weeks ahead about the best way forward, taking all of these things into account.
One of the things that you didn't really mention there is geography. I'm joined on the line by Dr. Peter Sloan, a GP in Connemara. Peter, you feel that applying Dublin-needed levels of restrictions to the whole of the country, or particularly your part of the country, isn't a one-size-fits-all solution that's working?
No. Well, good morning, Philip. And hi, Paddy. How's it going? I think Paddy mentioned three interesting things during what he said. The first was the phrase living with. And if I go back to March 2020, or go back to the early part of this, we were told that the idea was we would learn how to live with a virus. What I seem to be seeing is a situation where NPHET wishes to eradicate or just deal with the fact that life doesn't carry risk. That was the second thing Paddy mentioned, risk. So we're in a situation now where the risks are much less. They're very difficult to quantify, but there's also a lot of risk to overall health. Health is not the absence of illness. And what I see in my community and what I see amongst my patients is lots of people who have more poorly managed chronic diseases like diabetes and blood pressure, which cause strokes. Mental health of teenagers, mental health of elderly people, people over the age of 80 whose overall health has deteriorated rapidly in the last 18 months because they're now more socially isolated, which they will never recover from. And if someone wants to tell me that's not risk, of course that's risk, but that's much more difficult to quantify. So I would say that the balance of risks here needs to be taken into account, and we should be trying in a much more robust way to quantify the degree of risk that we have from continuing the strategy we have. And the third thing is that Paddy alluded to consequences. So if as individuals we are allowed to decide what degree of risk we have ourselves and accept that each of our risk-taking behaviour carries consequences, then I would also make a strong argument that not just where I am, but that nationwide we should be moving much more quickly to getting back to normal and allowing people to assess their own personal degree of risk, where we know that the consequences are less for lots of reasons, and that we learn to live with a virus, which is what we were told to begin with.
But Peter, is it not fallacious to suggest, as I am inferring from what you're saying there, that NPHET haven't done this kind of modelling, haven't assessed this kind of risk before they make their advice?
Well, I'm not privy to NPHET modelling. All I see is pragmatically what I see on the ground in terms of my community. The number of people who have been ill with the virus, the degree of serious illness, and it doesn't seem to me that the harm that's caused by those measures justifies the action being taken. I see more harm being done at this stage to my patients within my practice in terms of mental health, in terms of misdiagnosis. You know, I go back to what I said a few minutes ago. Every single day in this country, people die from suicide. People die in car accidents, horrific case on the motorway.
But NPHET has input from general practitioners, it has input from all manner of different medical disciplines.
Yes, they do.
And their
yes.
big picture assessment, Peter, is that the risk of COVID still outweighs the risks that you're highlighting.
I think one of the reasons for that, Philip, is that the quantification of risk, the quantification of risk of harm in many, many different ways is almost an impossibility. It's very, very difficult. So, for example, you know, you look last year when we had lockdown and teenage girls weren't exercising when they're building bone density. If you measure their bone density in 60 or 70 years' time and it's reduced and they have an increased risk of hip fractures, does that not quantify risk? That will not have been factored into any model that NPHET will have run. There are multiple different ways. I'm not saying that we don't require to take great care. I think Paddy alluded very, very nicely to, you know, the different factors that have to be taken in terms of assessment of risk, mitigation of risk. But at some point, we also do have to learn to live with the virus. The real-world data, as you just alluded to yourself, from Israel, suggests very strongly that, and look at New Zealand and Australia, you cannot eradicate this virus. And therefore, do you choose to live with it? And if we do choose to live with it, we need to get back and live with it and learn to live with it. Otherwise, we continue on, and we continue on for another 12 months, another 18 months, another 2 years. And when there still remains incidence of COVID and people being admitted to hospital on illness, and yes, as with every condition, there will be people who succumb to COVID, you know, you have to learn to live with an illness. Otherwise, what we're doing is we're not living. Health is not the absence of illness. We will not achieve the absence of COVID.
Are you happy to say to everybody who attends your practice, though, that we're going to lift all restrictions and by the end of the year, if the statistics bear out, I'm afraid that 0.5% of you or 1% of you or whatever it is are going to be dead as a consequence of that decision?
Well, you don't know that, and NPHET don't know that, and nobody knows that. And there's plenty of real-world data around, Philip. If you look at, for example, Sweden, you look at Florida, you look at North versus South Dakota, there's lots of real-world evidence about the effectiveness of strategies versus what NPHET have chosen. In my practice for the last 18 months, we have firmly practiced the guidelines as issued. We have at all times used distancing. Personal protective equipment. We've given, as of last week, 1,773 doses of vaccine to our patients, and we've worked very hard to look after our patients safely. COVID-19 is a real viral illness. Of course it is.
Okay.
I'm making the point that in terms of risk and benefit, that the quantification of harm is very, very difficult. We were told right back at the start that we were going to have to learn to live with a virus, not eradicate it, and people should be, there are 25 people die a day in Ireland from cancers, every single day, all year round. And we don't tell people who smoke that this is now prohibited and banned and outlawed because there will be X number of people who die from cigarette smoking every day. We have measures in place, and the proportionality of measures is the question here. I think we should move back much more quickly towards opening society and normally, allowing people to choose what degree of risk aversion measures they choose, whether that's wearing face masks themselves, washing your hands, socially distancing, staying at home, that they're afforded those choices themselves. And I will run my practice safely so that my patients are not exposed to any additional risk.
Sorry, are you seriously suggesting that in public settings where they are currently mandated that masks should be optional?
I think that the government has a responsibility to make decisions and takes advice that they get from different sources, and they take public health advice from NPHET. There are lots of varying opinions as to what the government may choose. I follow the advice.
But NPHET is not a homogenous body of one single opinion. It's 40-plus experts with a wide range of opinions, and their consensus opinion on masks still remains the same, that it is one of the better tools in the armoury.
That may be the case.
But you don't agree.
I have to be very careful what I say, Philip, because I've watched a number of my colleagues who have expressed opinions, quoting evidential fact in various opinions, who have been subject to what the medical council tells them. I can read the scientific data and I can read the scientific evidence for myself, and I would encourage people to do so. And we practice in my practice at all times the guidelines as the guidelines are issued by public health and as issued by the government.
Or we could continue to defer to the body of experts in their particular field whom we have asked to make these assessments on our behalf, and we could abide by them. Paddy Mallon, let me bring you back in here.
Philip, you and I didn't ask NPHET to make decisions on our behalf. The government did.
And we elect the government to make those decisions for us.
The government, and the government had another body in place, which was an oversight body, which was shut down. I think, I go back to what Paddy said at the beginning, there's a very complicated situation of assessing risk and weighing up measures that have to be given. NPHET is tasked with a narrow remit to give public health advice to government. Government is tasked with running society. They told us last year that we would have to learn to live with a virus, which does carry some degree of risk, and the behaviours of each of us individually have consequences. I am begging the question, why are we not learning to live with the virus more quickly?
Maybe the virus has different plans for us than wanting to live with us. And one of the other things that arises from what you're saying is that the reopening of society might not necessarily be orderly. I have a statement in here from An Garda Síochána yesterday where they had to ask pubs to temporarily cease trading after the All-Ireland final. They had reports of antisocial behaviour, a lack of social distancing among crowds. Gardaí conducted a number of inspections of licensed premises in the Croke Park area. A number of these premises were asked to temporarily cease trading in the interests of public safety. Gardaí are carrying out inquiries into alleged breaches of COVID regulations at one of those premises. Things don't always go according to plan. I was wondering, Paddy Mallon, when you looked at the final yesterday, I mean, of course, it did everybody's hearts good to hear a roar from inside Croke Park. But were you a bit puzzled as to why it was that you would reduce the capacity of Croke Park by 50%, but then put everybody into the same couple of tiers?
So I guess the first thing I would say, it is fantastic to have the crowds back. And I think that there are a huge amount of unknowns about how we're going to progress over the next few weeks. And, you know, I think that there has been a cautious approach to that. And, we can look at things like Croke Park and we can put on a hat that is critical and saying, you know, why are people doing this? Why are these decisions being made? But what tends to happen is when we look at the consequences of these events so far, we haven't seen major disasters. And I think that what we need to do with what happened yesterday at Croke Park and the surrounding areas is just wait and see what the consequences are and take learnings from that. And if there are things that we do need to learn from it that can improve things, great. If it works and there are no issues, then that's also a learning for us to help us, as Peter said, help us to better live with this virus. Because the bottom line is that we, as a society, we do need to progress. We've had a vaccine program that's been amazing in terms of its uptake, in terms of how it's been organised. And we need to start using that over the medium to short term to say, how are we going to leverage the protection that that's given us to enable us to return to as normal a life as possible in as short a period as possible? And the reason that you don't want to delay that decision too long is that the vaccine protection may not be long-lasting. We don't know how long that's going to last. And there are learnings that we need to make in terms of societal reopening in the short term while we have a large proportion of the population fully vaccinated. There's a lot of unknowns. There's going to be a lot of uncertainties over the next few weeks and months. There's going to be a lot of mistakes made. But the bottom line is government have their responsibility, but everyone in the country also has their responsibility. And the responsibilities are the same now as they were at the beginning. It's responsibilities to yourself and your own health. But it's also the responsibilities to ensure where possible that you don't transmit this infection on to friends or loved ones who may be more vulnerable. And those sorts of decisions we all need to make. And we're just going to continue having to make them, whether we're vaccinated or not, in the weeks ahead.
I'm going to bring into the conversation here Liam Fitzgerald, a member of the EPIC Working Group. He's also the technical manager at Bord Gáis Energy Theatre. Liam, how did it feel looking at the 40,000 people in Croke Park yesterday?
Well, to be honest, it felt great. Like, this is what we want, and this is what we feel is possible. It clearly is possible because it happened. So, to be honest, it felt
good.
But
are you not asking yourself what's the difference between the players on the pitch at Croke Park and having a band on the pitch at Croke Park?
Oh, very definitely. At the same time, is it feeling good to see people gathering again? And we're delighted that the GAA were able to achieve that and achieve it in a manner that made sure that people were safe. My point, the main question that we have to ask is, why is it different for other sectors? And we have a problem with the fact that it can take place for one type of event, and it is an event, it's a sporting event, and it can't take place for a music event or a family event or a community event of whatever type of level of entertainment it is. There seems to be a misconception out there that the only type of concert you can have is people jumping all over each other at the front of the stage. There's lots of different types of concerts out there that we can run in very different ways. It can be fully seated, indoors, outdoors, all different types of. And our industry is really good at coming up with solutions. That's what we do for a living. We take potentially awkward places to put an event on and we make it happen because we solve problems as an industry.
And
we work within... Yeah, go ahead.
No, sorry, I interrupted you. Go on.
I was just saying, we work within what are often quite complicated guidelines and quite arduous regulations. You know, we're used to this.
Okay.
We're just being asked to let us do it.
And does the cynic in you ever wonder, might there be more voters attending yesterday's All-Ireland hurling final in Croke Park than would typically attend a live music event? And is that why preferential consideration is given to sporting events?
Well, maybe the cynic would, but I would hope that that would not be the case, because that would be a very sad day for the country.
Well, then, can you understand why it is that live events are being treated so differently?
That I can't, no. What we have on one hand is we have the same health and safety and event consultants being used to write the guidelines for both, but yet the event guidelines are sitting on the table for the last 2 months and the sport guidelines are being embraced. It is confusing to us. We don't know why it's happening. If we believe Minister Martin's much publicised comments last week, it's because she's not being listened to in government. She says that she's sought opportunity to present and mm-hmm. has been refused.
And do you take what she says at face value?
Well, we have to. She's our minister. You know, like, if we don't take her at face value, then we're lost completely. We need a voice at the table, and there's only one table that's making the decision, and that's the cabinet table. Like, there's a lot of people out there saying NPHET says this and NPHET says that, and NPHET are making these decisions. They're not. The cabinet makes the decision. The cabinet runs the country. NPHET gives them advice. Everybody else gives them advice as well. The cabinet are the people who make the decisions, the elected individuals who I'm sure will be remembered at the next general election.
Liam Fitzgerald, member of the EPIC Working Group, thank you very much. And also to Paddy Mallon and Dr. Peter Sloan. Next, Irish-born journalist Jane Ferguson reports from Afghanistan on the growing opposition to the Taliban takeover.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.